offering the same big grin to everyone. You never have to worry how you'll get around.
To wonder, would the world have been a different place if that group of young people had survived their journey in their bus, whatever, you know, in their little van, in which they were killed shortly after that recording was made. They're called Novum. It was a band that was called Novum by, I believe the name was given to them by the recording engineer who helped them record that. And he participated in the recording of, he may have been in that video. I can't recall whether he is present there or not in that video. The engineer who helped them record that, they were a very young band. Anyway, I haven't researched that for a while. I just remembered that I'd heard it, and so I Googled it, I came up with it, and I played it because I knew about it from before, and I did research that band. So at the time, I was fascinated. When I found out about that band, I was really interested in them because they had a few songs that were worth hearing, you know, and so that was one of them. Yesterday, I have some news. So I found this watch, and where is it? This watch, it's a Waltham 17 jewel. You know, wind up watch. It was a chronograph, so it has all the dials, you know, it has dials on it, like, but the buttons broke on the side of it. That there were buttons, the buttons fell off, and I stopped wearing it at some point, but I believe sometime in high school I bought this over the, it was mail order. We couldn't have got this locally. I got a mail order watch, and I think it was probably in about 1973, because that's when, you know, if I didn't get it then, I wouldn't have been wearing it in high school. I wouldn't have had it. It was not in university. I got it in high school, so I just don't know when exactly, but I believe it was about grade 11, probably. Just a good guess, I think. It's the middle of high school in Canada. We used to have grade 13. So that was the middle of high school. And I think that's when I, probably roughly when I got it. So it's about 49 years old. And I figured yesterday, well, I poked a hole in my finger using my new fork device, which is otherwise a perfectly great device, other than the fact I stabbed myself with it. It's a little fork with pointy ends on it, and that's how I cut myself. But I was trying to get my other watch, this watch, trying to put a watch band on this one. I know the first try was, my attempt was to try and put my new watch band, which is this one, the nylon, black nylon band. I wanted to put it on this watch, but I can't because this Casio watch is a beautiful watch, but it has a very tight clearance. The holes for the spring bar on this watch, the two spring bars, are so close to the watch itself that there's no way to get any band of any thickness through there. You wouldn't be able to put a NATO watch down because it would have to go through that clearance. And you would have to have, well, you could do it if you had a thin enough strap. It's just that there are no straps that I've been able to find so far that do that. And I only learned how tight the clearance was. I just learned yesterday how tight it was because I was trying to put this new strap on there, and I wasn't going to take off my watch strap just to find out what the clearance was. So I waited till yesterday. I tried to replace the band. I failed. But I did a lot of things yesterday. After I cut my finger, I put a bandage on it, and then I proceeded to learn how to use that tool properly. And I put my old metal, watch bracelet on there, and it works fine. It works perfect. I know it fits because I've been wearing, I used to wear it. That works fine. And I also removed 4 links from an expansion bracelet, which is also stainless steel, like this one is. And I did that in less than half an hour. I removed 4 links, and I'd never done that before using YouTube. And the YouTube video, I spent some of the time watching the YouTube video, but it took me only half an hour to remove 4 links from that. And it's quite a, it's quite an operation if you've never done it. Actually, it's quite a job. Anyway, but that worked perfectly. I ended up with a watch strap that was, it's an expansion bracelet, just like this one, but it's stretchy. And it fits my wrist perfectly, so it's my backup. If this one ever breaks or anything, I've got a backup. And, well, of course, it would work with this other one, too. The thing is, they're all the same width. They're all 20 millimeter. The bands, you have to know the width of the band, the width that it is in between these two holes where the spring bar goes, that distance, 20 millimeters in this case, but they're both 20 millimeters. That's very fortunate because it meant that this new watch strap fits this old watch perfectly, and so I was able to get that installed. I'm trying to think what else I learned. I learned a lot yesterday, though. I learned a lot. Today I'm expecting a package, so we might want to save some time for that video. But it's my orthotics. I'm going to have to try the orthotics. They're arriving, and also I bought an angle grinder. I've never owned an angle grinder, so I ordered one on Amazon because it was too inexpensive not to order it. It was $60. If we could only see the world through the eyes of a child. That's the song, right? What a song. There are no fences. You see no fences in the wild. If we could only see the world through the eyes of a child. I mean, the words of that song are phenomenal, and the song itself is phenomenal, and it's got a lot of musical musical. I'm trying to think of the word. I need to fire this up. I need to fire up my monitor. My monitor for my video here. I need to see myself so that I know that I exist, I guess, or something. Something like that. Just that I know that it's running. That I, even though I'm not watching myself on the problem is if I bring OBS onto this screen here, everything will be echo like a million zillion times. I don't want that effect. So that was incredible, that music by Novum. Now, Novum was just the name given to them by their recording engineer because they didn't have a name. They were just a group of young people who were forming a band, were trying to form a band, and they died shortly after that, like right after that, on their bus ride, in their van. Their van ride, they were all riding in the same van, they all got killed. But it was right after that recording, so that's the last we ever saw of them, was in that group of recordings of all the songs they recorded with that recording engineer. Yeah, I don't even know. What year was that? That's the other thing. What year was that? I'm not even sure. Yeah, it was quite a long time ago, I think. Okay, we can look it up. We can Google it. I'm going to Google it. Let's see. I don't think I'm going to find it. That's the problem. I'm looking up a band from the 80s, but no, it's not them. They're not the November group. Okay, so, well, I found the video, right? So I know I can find the video again. If we look up Novum. No, I have to go. If I look up Eyes of a Child, I can find it maybe. I want to do this, but I don't want to take a lot of time to do this. But there it is. Okay, so it was on Bradley David's YouTube video channel, Bradley David. Right. Oh, I want to listen to it again. I think we will listen to it. We'll listen to it again at the end because show more. Bradley David. I don't think David Bradley. Maybe that's who that is. I'm trying to think what the name of their producer was. He was a producer too. I imagine he paid for their production as well. On spec, which recording engineers do. It's something that we do as recording engineers if we want to help a band and also promote our own. Oh, there's another song. Yeah, another Novum song. Yeah, let's look up Novum Music. Yeah. Novum Music. Novum Music. There we go. What do we find? Well, that's just, okay. No, it's nothing. Hang on a sec. Yeah, I know there's a page on the internet somewhere that talks about the band. That tells their story, or there used to be. I'm not sure. I'm not sure really if it's there now. So the story of my watch. 49 years old. It's time to use it or lose it. That's what I figured. And it works. Like it's a wind-up watch. It works, but it works. I didn't know it even worked, and then I just said, let's try winding it and see if it works. And sure enough, it works. It's a 17 jewel Waltham. It weighs a lot, but now I've got one on each wrist. It's keeping good time so far. 10:23 is it? Yep, that's close. It's very accurate so far. A melody, Psalm 30, a song of inauguration of the house of David. Father Jehovah, help us to be wise with the wisdom that only you can give us and that we don't get from the world. In Jesus' name, amen. You know what? Yeah, I thought of something. We're often, you know, we think that we're being wise when we conform. When we do what other people do, we think we're wise. Like, we dress the way they do, so we think we're wise. And the other thing is we care what other people think. That's how you can tell whether somebody cares what other people think, is whether they dress the same as other people. And this is not necessarily a good thing, to care what other people think, or to care what anyone thinks. That's not necessarily a good thing at all. It's just that you can tell when someone cares what someone thinks by what they do, by how closely they copy and imitate other people. So if people dress in the same sort of clothes as everybody else that they're working with, then you know they care what other people think about how they dress. Or maybe they have no option. In some cases, they have no option. They have to dress that way or they get, you know, kicked out of their job. Or whatever, but rarely is that the case. You know, rarely is there a dress code where you have to conform or you're gone. It's more peer pressure or some kind of pressure, group pressure. So anyway, let's read. I shall exalt you, O Jehovah, for you have drawn me up. And you have not let my enemies rejoice over me. O Jehovah, my God, I cried to you for help, and you proceeded to heal me. O Jehovah, you have brought up my soul from Sheol itself. You have kept me alive, that I should not go down into the pit. Make melody to Jehovah, O you loyal ones of his. Give thanks to his holy memorial, because being under his anger is for a moment. Being under his goodwill is for a lifetime. In the evening, weeping may take up lodging, but in the morning, there is a joyful cry. As for me, I have said in my ease, never shall I be made to totter. O Jehovah, in your goodwill, you have made my mountain to stand in strength. You concealed your face. I became one that is disturbed. To you, O Jehovah, I kept calling. And to you, Jehovah, I kept making entreaty for favor. What profit is there in my blood when I go down to the pit? Will the dust laud you? Will it tell of your trueness? Hear, O Jehovah, and show me favor. O Jehovah, prove yourself my helper. You have changed my mourning into dancing for me. You have loosened my sackcloth, and you keep me girded with rejoicing, in order that my glory may make melody to you and not keep silent. O Jehovah, my God, to time indefinite, I will laud you. That was Psalm 30, chapter 30 of Psalms. Psalm 30, but look at this. This I'd never noticed before. I don't think I really noticed this. Verse 9, what profit is there in my blood when I go down to the pit? When I die, in other words, when I go down to the pit, what profit is there in my blood? What profit is there in my blood when I go down to the pit? What profit is there in my blood when I go down to the pit? The reason why that's important is because there was somebody for whom this came true, and that was the Messiah. There was profit in the Messiah's blood when he went down to the pit. He was in the grave for 3 days. And the profit was, when he came back, when he was resurrected, when he had come back, when he'd been brought back by Jehovah, and then when he ascended, when he was resurrected by Jehovah, he had the value of his blood. He owned it because it was something he had earned for all of mankind by dying in behalf of mankind. His blood was worth a great deal, and that value he had with him when he was resurrected, and when he ascended then to heaven, he had that money, let's say, that profit was with him. He kept the profit with him until he got to heaven, when he could then pay that debt for mankind. That's the idea there that's hidden in that verse. What profit is there in my blood when I go down to the pit? It's true of the Messiah. It's true of the brothers of Jesus who rule with him in heaven. There's some profit in their blood, but the ransom's been paid, though. Jesus paid the ransom, so there's no that this scripture doesn't apply to them. It applies to Jesus. He paid the ransom. O Jehovah, my God, I cried to you for help, and you proceeded to heal me. I mean, unless we believe that the 144,000 are partly paying the ransom along with Jesus, there's no reason to believe that, but someone might argue that. There might be a way to argue that. Anyway, and the other part of this that really gets me is this being under his anger is for a moment. Being under his goodwill is for a lifetime. That is powerful. David knew that Jehovah had saved him. You have drawn me up. In other words, out of the grave. You've drawn me up out of the grave. David, I thought of this morning. David was a man who had a lot of enemies. Didn't he have a lot of enemies? He had a lot of enemies. Like, a lot. Because all of these Psalms, he's talking about his enemies, his enemies, his enemies, his enemies. He's singing about his enemies all the time. I'm not sure I would write even one song about my enemies, but David is writing songs about his enemies all the time. And I don't know if that's because he has more enemies than I do or than other people do, did, you know, than other people generally do, or whether he was just preoccupied with his enemies. It's hard to know. He's certainly focused on that, though. Isaiah chapter 10. Let's see how long this is. It's a long one. It is a long one. One of the longest, maybe the longest in Isaiah. The longest chapter maybe in Isaiah. I think it very possibly is. I'm not sure, though. I'm not sure exactly. It's close to it. Isaiah chapter 10. Woe to those who are enacting. I was going to say exacting. Woe to those who are enacting harmful regulations and those who constantly writing have written out sheer trouble in order to push away the lowly ones from a legal case and to wrest away justice from the afflicted ones of my people. For the widows to become their spoil, that they may plunder even the fatherless boys. And that they may plunder even the fatherless boys. And what will you men do at the day of being given attention and at the ruin when it comes from far away? Toward whom will you flee for assistance, and where will you leave your glory? Except it be that one must bow down under the prisoners, and that people keep falling under those who have been killed. In view of all this, his anger is not turned back, but his hand is stretched out still. Aha! The Assyrian, the rod for my anger, and the stick that is in their hand for my denunciation. Against an apostate nation I shall send him, and against the people of my fury I shall issue a command to him to take much spoil and to take much plunder and to make it a trampling place like the clay of the streets. Though he may not be that way, he will feel inclined. Though his heart may not be that way, he will scheme, because to annihilate is in his heart, and to cut off nations, not a few. For he will say, are not my princes at the same time kings? Is not Calno just like Carchemish? Is not Hamath just like Arpad? Is not Samaria just like Damascus? Whenever my hand has reached the kingdoms of the valueless God, whose graven images are more than those at Jerusalem and at Samaria, will it not be that just as I shall have done to Samaria and to her valueless gods, even so I shall do to Jerusalem and to her idols? And it must occur that when Jehovah terminates all his work in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, I shall make an accounting for the fruitage of the insolence of the heart of the king of Assyria, and for the self-importance of his loftiness of eyes. For he has said, with the power of my hand I shall certainly act, and with my wisdom, for I do have understanding, and I shall remove the boundaries of peoples, and their things stored up I shall certainly pillage, and I shall bring down the inhabitants just like a powerful one. And just as if a nest, my hand will reach the resources of the peoples. And just as when one gathers eggs that have been left, I myself will gather up even all the earth, and there will certainly be no one fluttering his wings or opening his mouth or chirping. Will the axe enhance itself over the one chopping with it? Or the saw magnify itself over the one moving it back and forth? As though the staff moved back and forth, the ones raising it on high, as though the rod raised on high, the one who is not wood. Therefore the true Lord, Jehovah of armies, will keep sending upon his fat ones a wasting disease. And under his glory, a burning will keep burning away like the burning of a fire. And Israel's light must become a fire, and his Holy One a flame. And it must blaze up and eat up his weeds and his thorn bushes in one day. And the glory of his forest and of his orchard he will bring to an end, even from the soul clear to the flesh. And it must become like the melting away of one that is ailing. And the rest of the trees of his forest, they will become such a number that a mere boy will be able to write them down. And it will certainly occur in that day that those remaining over of Israel and those who have escaped of the house of Jacob will never again support themselves upon the one striking them. And they will certainly support themselves upon Jehovah, the Holy One of Israel. In trueness, a mere remnant will return, the remnant of Jacob, to the mighty God. For although your people, O Israel, would prove to be like the grains of sand of the sea, a mere remnant among them will return. An extermination decided upon will be flooding through in righteousness, because an exterminating and a strict decision the sovereign Lord Jehovah of armies will be executing in the midst of the whole land. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah of armies has said. Do not be afraid, O my people who are dwelling in Zion, because of the Assyrian, who with the rod used to strike you, and who used to lift up his own staff against you in the way that Egypt did. For yet a very little while, and the denunciation will have come to an end, and my anger in their wearing away. And Jehovah of armies will certainly brandish against him a whip, as at the defeat of Midian by the rock Oreb, and his staff will be upon the sea, and he will certainly lift it up in the way that he did with Egypt. And it must occur in that day that his load will depart from upon your shoulder, and his yoke from upon your neck, and the yoke will certainly be wrecked because of the oil. He has come upon Aiath, he has passed along through Migron. At Michmash he deposits his articles. They have passed over the ford. Geba is a place for them to spend the night. Ramah has trembled. Gibeah of Saul itself has fled. Let your voice out in shrill cries, O daughter of Galim. Pay attention, O Laisha. O you afflicted one, Anathoth. Madmina has run away. The inhabitants of Gibim themselves have taken to shelter. It is yet day in Nob to make a halt. He waves his hand threateningly at the mountain of the daughter of Zion, the hill of Jerusalem. Look, the true Lord, Jehovah of armies, is lopping off boughs with a terrible crash, and those tall in growth are being cut down, and the high ones themselves become low, and he has struck down the thickets of the forest with an iron tool, and by a powerful one, Lebanon itself will fall. That was Isaiah chapter 10. There's a lot in that. It's a prophecy about the Assyrians and how Jehovah is going to use the Assyrians to bring Jerusalem down and Samaria down as well. And apparently it's not yet happened. So it's a prophecy, definitely a prophecy. Uh, Although, wait a minute. No, it says just as I, no, yes, it says just as I shall have done to Samaria in the translation here, but we know there's no future. There's no future, but it there's perfect and imperfect in Hebrew. So if it's not been accomplished yet, it would be in the imperfect tense. So that's how we would know that it was shall have done and not done. It's not, it's a prophecy, but it's not in the prophetic verb tense, which is perfect. Perfect. It has been done. In other words, I have destroyed Samaria. That would be the prophetic form because it's the perfect form. In a sense, the perfect form is the future. But the translator here was able to gather that it was shall have done. It's not done yet, but it's a prophecy about what's going to be done. I wonder how that was in. I wonder how that was formed in the verb in Hebrew. I need to know that now, so I'll have to study that. Because I shall do to Jerusalem is sounds like it's perfect. Although maybe not. Wait a minute. No, it sounds imperfect because it's not done yet. But normally, the prophecy is the perfect. So I shall do something is going to be a prophecy. It's in the future, but it's perfect. There's no verb for the future. There's no verb tense for the future. There's no future tense in Hebrew. It's always perfect or imperfect. So there's a question. But I think I was thinking about Acts chapter 15. There's no reason to assume that that occurred at the same... There's no reason to believe that that was the 14 years that Paul was talking about in Galatians. Chapter 2 of Galatians, where he says, then after 14 years I again went up to Jerusalem. If we were to believe that that was talking about Acts chapter 15... For one thing, there'd be no evidence of a revelation, which there is in the case of Acts 11. In Acts chapter 11, where Agabus had a revelation. Agabus received a revelation, and then Paul went up to Jerusalem on a relief ministry. That was in 44 CE in the genealogy. But it's also true that Herod died in that year, and that's common chronology for that's conventional chronology. Everybody knows that Herod died in 44 CE, and that was the year Paul went up to Jerusalem. If we were to believe that Paul had gone up, he did go up three times at least to Jerusalem in his own, because in his own account, 3 years later he went up to Jerusalem here, Galatians 1 and 18. But then he went into the regions of Samaria, verse 21, Syria and Cilicia, Syria and Cilicia, that was where he preached. That was what I was trying to say. I mean, I know where he went. He was preaching in Asia. Well, in Asia Minor, he did a lot of preaching. He was living in Asia Minor for most of this time. But he went up to Jerusalem. He was in Damascus at one point, actually. He was in Damascus at first, and then he went up to Jerusalem. And then he preached in Syria, which would be Damascus probably, and around from the base being, seeing that he had lived in Damascus. But we don't need to know that right now. But then he went to Cilicia. That's more Asia Minor in that area, I believe. So he started... And he went to Antioch, but anyway, without trying to figure everything out, we will at some point, hopefully, we'll figure out everything, hopefully, about what Paul did and where he went. But he went up to Jerusalem after 3 years of being in Damascus. It says in verse 17, Damascus, he was in Damascus, then 3 years later he went up to Jerusalem, and then into Galatians chapter 2, after 14 years, I again went up to Jerusalem. That doesn't sound like he went up in between those two. So this cannot be, according to the, it doesn't, or it's possible, but it doesn't seem likely that, especially since in chapter 11 of Acts, where it says he went up here, it, in Galatians 2 and 2, as a result of a revelation. Just take a look at Acts chapter 11 for one moment, please. Let's see this. At the end of that, Agabus received a revelation. Agabus rose and proceeded to indicate through the Spirit that a great famine was about to come upon the entire inhabited earth. That's a revelation. It didn't say in Galatians that Paul went up as a result of his own revelation. It just said as a result of a revelation. Now, this revelation of Agabus led Paul to be sent here in verse 30, dispatching a relief ministration, verse 29, to the brothers dwelling in Judea, and verse 30, by the hand of Barnabas and Saul, they went up to Jerusalem. That was the 14 years talked about in Galatians. He went up by way of a revelation. The other evidence for that is that Galatians chapter 2, when you read it, he said, because of the false brothers brought in quietly, there are always false brothers. That doesn't apply to any particular time. But Paul said here, whatever sort of men they formerly were, here it is. In verse 2, I am preaching. Okay, I laid before them privately. Privately he laid this before them. He told them the things he was doing about the preaching work, and he said he was afraid he'd been running in vain in verse 2 there. That doesn't sound like this was a public thing that he was going up to Jerusalem to do. So this was in addition to the relief ministry, evidently, because further on in this chapter 2, James and Peter there it is they James and Peter and John, the ones that Cephas is Peter, the ones who seemed to be pillars, gave Paul and Barnabas the right hand of sharing together that they should go to the nations, and that James and Cephas and John would go to the circumcised, or the Jews, in other words, but only Paul and Barnabas should keep the poor in mind. Well, they had just been to Jerusalem on a relief ministry. This was their ministry right now in Jerusalem, was a relief ministry, so they should keep the poor in mind because they were there doing that right then. They were giving to the poor right then. So they should keep them in mind because that's what they were doing. It was a relief ministry. That's implied there in verse 10, so that's further evidence that that was the relief ministry, contrary to the idea that that was Acts 15, where the certain brothers in the congregation, certain people had sent Paul and Barnabas again up to Jerusalem. That was another trip. That was after the 14. There were after 3 years, after 14 years, Paul went to Jerusalem. And here again in Acts 15, he went to Jerusalem again. Now, it's also possible, we shouldn't rule this out either, that this chapter 15, since this is written by Luke, who was an historian, he was not present or aware of these things. He was a physician. He was a well-known a well-respected person because he was a physician. He was an historian of these facts. But it's possible that these facts are, this is possibly a reiteration of something that happened earlier in Acts. This could be coinciding to there's no evidence of it, but it's possible that I mean, we don't have any definite evidence. It's possible this could have been in conjunction with the relief ministry, that they were going up to Jerusalem to do that as well. We should not rule that out. I'm just saying we shouldn't rule it out that that's possible. It's never really possible to rule these things out. The Word of God is alive, so we can't ever rule it out. It can manifest in different ways at different times. And we apply it whenever we need to, in a way that exerts the truth upon us, in a way that helps us. That's how we use the Bible. So that's that. Okay, so let's go back. Let's look at John now, chapter 10. It's a very powerful chapter, I'm sure. It talks about, I believe, the other sheep. John chapter 10. Most truly I say to you, now this is Jesus speaking, he that does not enter into the sheepfold through the door but climbs up some other place, that one is a thief and a plunderer. But he that enters through the door is shepherd of the sheep. The doorkeeper opens to this one, and the sheep listen to his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has got all his own out, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. A stranger, they will by no means follow, but will flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus spoke this comparison to them, but they did not know what the things meant that he was speaking to them. Therefore Jesus said again, most truly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All those that have come in place of me are thieves and plunderers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the door. Whoever enters through me will be saved, and he will go in and out and find pasturage. The thief does not come unless it is to steal and slay and destroy. I have come that they might have life and might have it in abundance. I am the fine shepherd. The fine shepherd surrenders his soul in behalf of the sheep. The hired man, who is no shepherd, and to whom the sheep do not belong as his own, beholds the wolf coming and abandons the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them, because he is a hired man and does not care for the sheep. I am the fine shepherd, and I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I surrender my soul in behalf of the sheep. And I have other sheep which are not of this fold. Those also I must bring, and they will listen to my voice, and they will become one flock, one shepherd. This is why the Father loves me, because I surrender my soul in order that I may receive it again. No man has taken it away from me, but I surrender it of my own initiative. I have authority to surrender it, and I have authority to receive it again. The commandment on this I received from my Father. Again, a division resulted among the Jews because of these words. Many of them were saying, he has a demon and is mad. Why do you listen to him? Others would say, these are not the sayings of a demonized man. A demon cannot open blind people's eyes, can it? At that time, the festival of dedication took place in Jerusalem. It was winter time, and Jesus was walking in the temple in the colonnade of Solomon. Therefore, the Jews encircled him and began to say to him, how long are you to keep our souls in suspense? If you are the Christ, tell us outspokenly. Jesus answered them, I told you, and yet you do not believe. The works that I am doing in the name of my Father, These bear witness about me, but you do not believe because you are none of my sheep. My sheep listen to my voice, and I know them, and they follow me, and I give them everlasting life. They will by no means ever be destroyed, and no one will snatch them out of my hand. What my Father has given me is something greater than all other things. And no one can snatch them out of the hand of the Father. I and the Father are one. Once more the Jews lifted up stones to stone him. Jesus replied to them, I displayed to you many fine works from the Father. For which of those works are you stoning me? The Jews answered him, We are stoning you not for a fine work, but for blasphemy. Even because you, although being a man, make yourself a god. Jesus answered them, Is it not written in your law, I said you are gods? If he called gods those against whom the word of God came, and yet the scripture cannot be nullified, do you say to me, whom the Father sanctified and dispatched into the world, you blaspheme, because I said I am God's son? If I am not doing the works of my Father, do not believe me. But if I am doing them, even though you do not believe me, believe the works, in order that you may come to know and may continue knowing that the Father is in union with me and I am in union with the Father. Therefore they tried again to seize him, but he got out of their reach. So he went off again across the Jordan to the place where John was baptizing at first, and he stayed there. And many people came to him, and they began saying, John indeed did not perform a single sign, but as many things as John said about this man were all true, and many put faith in him there. So that was, it's just incredible, but that was Jesus defending himself again against the Jews who actually believed him, but they weren't his followers, of course. If I am not doing the works of my Father, do not believe me, he said. But look at that was verse 37. But look what he said in verse, this is important, Psalm 82, if we look back. Jesus in verse 34 said, Is it not written in your law, I said you are gods? Psalm 82 is what Jesus, I believe, is referring to. In the middle of the gods, Psalm 82, Jehovah is stationing himself in the assembly of the divine one. God is stationing himself in the assembly of the divine one. In the middle of the gods, he judges. The gods. These are the judges. How long will you keep on judging with injustice? He's talking to the judges, but they're gods. The judges are put in the place of gods on earth. They have godly power on earth to judge. In verse 6, there's the quote that Jesus is giving. I myself have said, you are gods, and all of you are sons of the Most High. Verse 7, surely you will die just as men do, because they're men, they're judges. Do rise up, O God, do judge the earth. Verse 8, in other words, these judges are not doing their job. God will have to judge because these other judges are not doing their job. Not the way that Jehovah wants it done. They're not judging with impartiality. They're not rendering justice for the lowly one or for the fatherless boy, meaning the orphan, or the afflicted ones who don't have any money to go to court, or maybe they do want to go to court. Some of these people do, of course. They want justice, certainly, so they need to go to court in order to get justice, perhaps, but there's no way that they can go to court without, well, they can't afford it. They're not rich, you know, like some people, to be able to hire a good lawyer, which they would need. But the other thing is that the judges are not judging with the proper um, spirit. They don't have the spirit of love. They don't judge with the proper impartiality. But they don't render justice for the afflicted people, the poor people, the widows and orphans, you know, the people like that. Fatherless boys, right? Okay, so John chapter 10, what a powerful, powerful chapter that was. The other sheep, but also the sheep, the sheep, the main sheep, and then the other sheep, the sheep that are the first sheep and the other sheep. That could mean, well, the other sheep, at one time that was interpreted, understood to be the great crowd, the other sheep, whereas the first group of sheep was the heavenly calling, the rulers with Christ, the ones who would rule in heaven with Christ. The other sheep had the earthly. It's heavenly in its own way, but it's on earth. It's the earthly calling, the calling to live on earth forever, which Adam and Eve originally had. That calling is given to the second group of other sheep, but that's just one understanding of this term, other sheep. That's one understanding of it. Jesus, he said himself, was the true shepherd, is the true shepherd still, because he's still alive in heaven now. He's been resurrected and raised to heaven. He's alive forever. He's got immortality. He won't be dying again. He's got immortality. He attained immortality as a gift from Jehovah. Jehovah gave him immortality because he proved faithful and performed the important service of rendering the ransom, sacrifice, the payment for the sin of Adam that redeems all mankind and grants them everlasting life. I surrender my soul. That's why the Father loves me. This is why the Father loves me, verse 17, because I surrender my soul in order that I may receive it again. You see, Jesus had not immortality as an angel. Perhaps he did, but I don't think so, because he gave it up. Even if he had it, he couldn't have had it. Because if he'd had immortality and then he came to earth as a man is mortal. So in order to, even if he had immortality, he'd have to give that up to become a man. So he didn't have immortality before, because how could you say someone who's immortal never dies, but Jesus did die. So he couldn't have had immortality prior to coming to earth. He had mortality as an angel. Angels are mortal. Then he came to earth. Angels are mortal. Angels are mortal because the devil is going to die with his angels who followed him. They're all angels. They were, still are, fallen angels, but they were angels who had mortality, not immortality. Jesus came to earth as a man, which is also mortal, but he's flesh, and, you know, obviously doesn't have the same position as an angel on earth as a man. He died as a man, was in the grave 3 days, and then was raised up, this time to immortality. There's a big difference there. He will not die again. He's not going to die. Therefore, he's always on hand to plead for us. That's the teaching of Melchizedek, or the idea of the high priest Melchizedek, except it's better than Melchizedek, because this is in Hebrews. Well, I think I'll have to Google it to find, not Google it, but search it. Hang on a second here. I don't know if I found it or not. I believe I spelled it wrong. Oh yeah, I have to spell the whole word? What did I do wrong? Oh. Okay, no, my cursor didn't do what I thought it was gonna do. Okay, wait a minute now. Let's see. Here we go. Hebrews, yeah, it's... There it is. This Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham. And then verse 17, in witness it is said, you are a priest forever, according to the manner of Melchizedek. Well, Melchizedek was not immortal. He did die. Jesus is different because he's a priest in the manner of Melchizedek, but forever. That's the difference. Because he's immortal, he lives forever as the high priest. There's a difference. But he's like Melchizedek, even though he's different in being immortal. Because Melchizedek was indeed a high priest in the days of, or the high priest in the days of Abraham. But, of course, in the days of Abraham, Moses had not yet come on the scene. Melchizedek was the king of Salem, which means Jerusalem, but it's not the same as the high priest under the law of Moses, because the law of Moses didn't exist yet. It's coming even before that. It's even before Moses. It's the high priest, though, of Jerusalem at that time, of Salem, of the time of Abraham. Abraham had a son, Isaac. Isaac had a son, Jacob. Jacob had a son, Joseph. Joseph was sold into Egypt, came into Egypt as a remnant. During the big famine, he saved his own family, brought them to Egypt, then later they returned under the guidance and leadership of Moses, who gave the law of Moses. So that was a long time after, well, actually 430 years that they were in Egypt, but it was a long time after, well, I mean, 430 years from Joseph in 1923 becoming second ruler in Egypt, ruler over all Egypt, second in command to the Pharaoh, 1923 all the way down to 1493, those 430 years, they were in Egypt. But of course, Jacob, in 1914, I'm trying to think whether Jacob came in 1914. I feel that it was Jacob that came in 1914 with his family. All of them came. And if we take Adam 5550 BCE minus 1914, what do we get? 3636. Right. Because Demetrius said that there were 3625 years. But when we do the number of generations, there are 22 generations. And therefore, every generation has a birth that could be sometime during the year. So the error could be half a year on average. Because there could be 1 month, or it could be 11 months, right? It could be 6 months on average difference between the birth of a child in terms of years and the birth of the next generation. There could be 6 months difference. So on average, a six-month error. For 22 generations, half a year times 22 years is 11 years. So add 11 to 3625 and we get 3636, which is the number. If I look up site colon willofjehovah.com, I look up 3636 and see what I find. It gives me, right, Oh, I mentioned it in preservation. Right. That was it. Yeah, that was when Israel, in the article Green, also, that's when Jacob, or Israel as he was later called, entered Egypt, was the year 1914 BCE. That's when Jacob, with his family, everybody came down to Egypt during that famine in Egypt in 1914 BCE. Okay, so we'll look up 1914. What do we get? Right. The third year of famine, that's when they came. Right? According to the Bible, but that's what I recall, too, that Jacob came to Egypt the year after Joseph's brothers. Right. Because Joseph's brothers came into Egypt, according to Demetrius, 3600 or 3,624 years after Adam. And Adam was created in 5550. According to the backwards calculation from the Septuagint for the generations, accounting for the extra 6 months, which is incurred as an average additional number to add. Because when we're rounding down, right, or rounding up, or whatever we're doing, if we round down and we don't round up, we're going to incur an error of half a year on average. That's the reason for that correction. And that was presented, I went over this. I discussed this in the article Green. I'm trying to think or see whether I did. Did I mention it in the article Joseph? Apparently I did. But I'm trying to find it. It doesn't mention it. It didn't find that number. But that's okay. Maybe it found the number 3625. Let's search for that. I don't see it. Okay, so it's not mentioned in the article Joseph, but that's okay because it's mentioned in the article Preservation and also in the article Green, both of which were articles that I wrote in my chronological research and my research of the Bible at the same time in order to find the Bible chronology. This was my family research also. I was interested in my own family, and that was what started me on the research that led me to further unravel the biblical chronology. So this is something that is, well, time will tell, like we always say, right? Time will tell. And I've got my new watch. Okay, I'm my old watch. I got my old watch. It feels like a new watch because I don't know when I stopped using it, but I'm sure I used it for quite a few years. I'm quite confident that I did, because it fell apart. Eventually, the buttons that controlled the stopwatch and some of the other functions fell off, whatever the other functions were. I'm not sure. I guess it was just the stop and start button, and then there was a reset button. That's what it was. So there were two buttons. If I could replace the pushers, the little pins are there. I believe that those buttons may still work. But the main analog hands, it's an analog watch. That's what you call it, a wind-up. I believe I know it still works as a wind-up right now. It's working. Let's see what time it is now. 11:14. 11:14. Right on time. I think this is a little slow. I think we're going to find that my wind-up watch is a bit slow. That's what I think, because it's 11:15 now on my digital. It's 11:15 on my computer, and it's 11:14. on my wind up. So it's slow. It's a couple of minutes a day we're going to find. Something like that. So that's another reason why I stopped using it, probably, is it's a couple of minutes slow. Maybe we could have it reconditioned. Like, do you know that channel on YouTube? Let's see. What's it called? Wristwatch Revival, I think it's called. Yeah. Where he reconditions watches, cleans them, sometimes rebuilds them and so on. Anyway, it's something to look into. It's an interesting channel to watch if you're interested in anything mechanical. It's fascinating to watch it because he does repair mechanical watches, which are very long gone now from the mainstream as far as the fact they're obsolete, but they're beautiful things. And to see someone repair them, restore them, work on them, and all the to learn about them is fascinating. It really is. And this is one of those watches, Marshall. I hope I got your name right. What was I going to say? I want to do this. I'm not sure if it's Marshall. Yeah, I don't know, but I think it is. What I'm going to say? Oh yeah, I know what I wanted to do. Did I close that window? Where is it? Let's see. There it is. Yeah, here it is. Okay, got it. Okay. Yeah, it was. Was it full screen? No. Maybe it was. I guess it was. Okay. Let's hear the song again.
For everyone.
There'd be no fair singers in the world if we could only see the world through the eyes of a child.
Right here. There, that's him. That was the producer right there. There he is. That is the producer. And he was present in the video earlier. We saw him on a few occasions, I know we did, at least three occasions. There he is, right there. That's him there. He's the producer. Now, he might be this fellow named Bradley, actually. I think he's still alive. He didn't die. And we also have, earlier on, you'll see something here. He's in the video. Doesn't appear in all their videos, I don't think, but he does play music. He plays guitar in some of their songs too. He definitely does. Not this one necessarily, because they have the lead singer is a guitar player as well in this song. But you see the back of this producer here. Earlier in this video, we see him from behind. He's there. I think it's early on because he's, there he is. Maybe that's it. Yeah, that might be it there. That's him pointing at them saying, yeah, you know, take it away or whatever. He's cueing them. There, cueing them on when, you see, giving them a time cue there. So that's that. Okay, so yeah, shopping. Let's talk about shopping, if we can, for a little bit. Do we have any time? We don't have any time. We're out of time. That's okay. I'm still shopping. I'm incessantly shopping. I think shopping has to be done incessantly, okay? Not purchasing incessantly, but shopping. And shopping is not incessant, but whenever you have any need, then the shopping has to be intense. I really believe that now. And online shopping is the way to do it nowadays. So anyway, this is Ward Green, October 30th, 2022. We're right on time for the maximum of our daily, or of our per video time limit. And it's 11:25 hours. Ward Green saying, I love you and bye for now.